Welcome to Highly Questionable. That is Dominique Foxworth. That is Mina Kimes. It's Friday. Let's get going.
Has the NFL already messed up their Deshaun Watson investigation?
So it's an open question now, because to recap for you, 22 women have filed civil suits against Deshaun Watson, alleging sexual misconduct, sexual assault, so many of them stemming from encounters in massage therapy situations. So Deshaun Watson, in the meantime, has been at camp with the Houston Texans, leading many people to wonder, how is it that he's playing football or participating in football activities right now and not on the commissioner's exempt list, which seems to be the purgatory design for situations just like this? And in the meantime, other people who have been asking those questions and have been frustrated by the way we talk about Deshaun Watson so often in the football context now, because the NFL has not acted in this way, has been two of the accusers involved who have now spoken to Sports Illustrated for a meticulous piece reported by Jenny Frentis, in which they say, not only have we been speaking to NFL investigators, because one of the theories has been, well, maybe the NFL can put them on the exempt list, or maybe the NFL isn't taking action because they haven't spoken to the accusers. Well, it turns out, per the reporting of Sports Illustrated, 10 of those women have spoken to NFL investigators. And two of those women have spoken to Jenny Frentis directly and said, the questions we were asked made us feel both incredibly uncomfortable and seemed to be asked with the intention of shaming us. They asked, what were you wearing at the time of these encounters? Which, if you look at any sort of manual about how to ask questions of alleged sexual assault victims, you know to avoid. And so the NFL and their investigative wing should be subjected to further follow-up questions here. And I understand why people have lots of worries and concerns about how this is being conducted.
Yeah, those women, the two women you referenced who spoke to Jenny Frentis, who's been all over this story, they said not only, you know, that the NFL's investigators made them feel uncomfortable, they contrasted it with the police department, who they said handled it right, let them speak, yes, interrupted, didn't ask them these damning questions. And that is a reminder not only that the NFL seems to be handling this in a very different, probably dubious way, frankly, but also that they went to the police. I keep seeing this story reported as ignoring the fact that there is an ongoing criminal investigation. The police have also been speaking to these women. And the question as to why Deshaun's not on the commissioner's exempt list, which I think is the real sort of issue at hand right now, it's been posited that perhaps it's because the criminal investigation is still ongoing. But it's important to note that in the past, the league has put players on the exempt list, like Josh Brown, the kicker, Kareem Hunt, before charges have been filed. There is precedent for this. And in this case, they have spoken to 10 women. Others have submitted sworn statements that they refuse to take into account, citing their own rules for whatever reason. Frankly, this is a disaster. Like, I don't understand why he is not on the list. I can't. Nobody has given me a clear explanation for this. And I think this reporting from Jenny not only is revealing that the NFL deserves a hell of a lot more criticism than they've gotten for how they've handled this, but also the media, how we have covered this, how we have discussed this, how we have couched it in terms, and we, I'm being general, of a trade, a hypothetical trade, setting aside this criminal investigation, these 22 allegations of sexual harassment and assault, as though they're a mere obstacle to the trade. So everybody involved in this, frankly, deserves a lot more scrutiny, ranging from the NFL to Watson to the media.
You brought up the commissioner's exempt list. I'm not an advocate for unilateral commissioner power in any cases, but he has it now. And it baffles me why he wouldn't use it in this case, because no one wants Deshaun Watson at camp. Deshaun Watson doesn't even want to be at camp.
Yes.
Like, the team, I can't imagine, wants him walking around with the specter of this investigation hanging on. I don't understand why the league would want him there. The accusers clearly do not want him there. It just doesn't make sense to me why you wouldn't act in this case. And I understand, I'm not surprised. I think oftentimes, and Mina, maybe you're not surprised either, but it doesn't mean you can't be upset. But I think some people are surprised that the NFL investigation is not handled above board. Like, I know they say it's independent, but like, biases exist. And the NFL has priorities. And this is true of everyone, frankly, not just money-making enterprises like the NFL, your priorities are kind of ordered. And the top of their priority is not solving domestic violence. It's not getting the truth about Deshaun Watson. The top of their priorities, and it always will be, is what's best for the business, protecting the shield, as they like to say it. So, like, I'm disappointed in the things that I read, but I'm not surprised. Like, I feel the same way about that I do, like, companies in general. Like, we talk about all the bad things that these companies are doing, and I'm not shocked. Like, it is our responsibility to hold them to account.
Well, especially, Dominique, if the number, and again, I hate to just keep harping on the most basic aspect of this thing, but 22, right? Like, at a certain point, like, part of the frustration that those women expressed to Jenny Vrentas, which is so obvious when you see them articulated, is when they watch the media, when they watch how people talk about it, it's incredibly frustrating and depressing, because it's not, I mean, look, one or two should be enough. Let's be clear about that. But when it's 22, there is a question of precedent. This precedent being set in terms of how we discuss this thing and how the NFL processes this thing, this has the ability to set a standard that is bordering on dystopian.
And Pablo, I just want to add one more thing, which is, if you don't feel qualified to weigh in or do legal analysis, that's fine. Just say the number. Those are the facts of the story. He's been accused by 22 women, and yet that bare minimum, that bar, that tiny bit of information continues to be left out, and that is what is so disappointing.
Is Pablo's beloved Ryan Fitzpatrick being lame for still complaining about the Dolphins?
Okay, he's not complaining. All right. He is merely being asked questions and answering them from a place that we all want him to be coming from, which is honesty, emotional integrity, and honesty. What he says, of course, is what he's always maintained. And he just gives more detail to it here, which is that, yes, this was his team. People around him, including Chan Gailey, by the way, a coach on the team, all agree that this was his team. And this was shocking that Tua Tagovailoa would come in and take the job. And he's allowed to say, I felt terrible about it, while also being a supportive, great teammate in so doing. That's what he's saying. Two things.
I mean, that's fine. That's fine. Pablo.
Okay,
your bias is so strong.
Take him down.
It's ugly.
So strong.
I'm sorry.
It's fine. All the things
my
that he
facts
said
are too strong.
Are,
maybe
are fine. However, like, Ryan Fitzpatrick was not brought into that situation as the quarterback of the future. It's like Ryan Fitzpatrick knew what the deal was when he signed up. So, like, I understand he was playing well, and you could argue the merits of the decision to pull him out or leave him in. But citing Chan Gailey? Like, come on.
Yeah,
Chan
I know.
Chan Gailey? That's who you're talking. Chan Gailey is the guy whose decision-making process, we're like, oh, don't worry about that. One of the best young coaches we have in the league. No, his decision, One of the best young GMs in the league. Chan Gailey.
Also, his teammates. So, hold on, Kyle Van Noy. Okay. His teammates were also consoling him because they knew how much.
Chan Gailey is also Ryan Fitzpatrick's boy. Like, or it feels weird he's so old to call him a boy, but like, they are friends. They are tight. They go
Wrong
back.
Friendship.
He is as close to Fitzpatrick, maybe, as Pablo. So, stepping back as an unbiased observer of this situation, the handling of it was weird at the time by Miami. Like, it really didn't make sense. The benching, the back and forth. I criticized it at the time.
Cost them a
playoff
berth.
The notion that is sort of suggested by Ryan in this article, which written by Robert Mays for The Athletic, go check it out, that he didn't say anything, that he just took it quietly. Like, that's not true. I mean, I went back and checked. He said, I'm heartbroken at the time, which is very uncommon for a starting quarterback who's benched in the NFL.
Oh, I'm
to
sorry.
Come out
a
say,
human being has feelings that he wants to share. He didn't blame anyone. I think he is. He's owning the threading of a needle. He is owning the fact that he was heartbroken, but also that he deserved to be the starter.
That's fine. All that's fine, but you can't then go back and say, I was doing everything right. I was a good teammate. I wanted to be supportive of him. Like, that's fine if you want to be
Mr.
Honest.
He was supportive.
No. That is, I mean, That's not what you
would ask.
Oh, can
you imagine? Imagine the emotional work it takes to be heartbroken and yet still support the person who, by virtue not of his own decision, but of the people who employ both of you, broke your heart. Man, that's, that's pretty admirable.
That's fine, but lean into it and go ahead and say,
also,
I'm heartbroken.
Fifth in QBR.
Then don't wait for a season later and be like, nah, I didn't do nothing wrong, but he looked good.
Washington did really good. If anyone cares about the actual football that was played last night, I just want to say something here. Pablo is about as qualified to criticize Ryan Fitzpatrick as I am with like Lenny, my dog. We gotta lay down some boundaries on this show. Like, he is firmly in the Ben Simmons territory at this point, where the bias is so strong, I can smell it in California.
I feel like it's important to point out that I am very much not forced to give Ryan Fitzpatrick treats.
Up next on HQ.
You've seen it? Don't lie, Mina. You've never seen it.
Yes! No, I have actually, it's been a while, but I have actually.
Hold on. I've seen parts of it over the course of a childhood.
You want to make
time to play the game that was impressed by everyone's punctuality today. Do you question?
I'm sorry. Why is Dominique the timekeeper? Why is he daddy in this household? Why am I getting credit from him specifically?
I am ethnically predisposed to always be 100% punctual.
Do you question if the Field of Dreams game was actually cool?
So this was a lot. I really enjoyed it, though, honestly. I mean, I enjoyed it despite the fact that I think the Des Moines Register called it the greatest sporting event in the history of the state of Iowa, which makes me feel bad for the state of Iowa. But I appreciated, like, the production value at the very least, because what we had was, like, a real cinematic approach that involved Kevin Costner himself walking out of the cornfield, I think playing the character from the movie. I wasn't sure if he was Kevin Costner, if he was whatever his character is called. He was acting his butt off, though. And from that point on, I was like, yeah, let's just lean all the way in on this. And so what we got in the end was a really good baseball game. And I think there's some poetic irony, of course, in the fact that Tim Anderson, a guy who would not be ever one of the ghosts coming out of the cornfield in the movie, coming to be the hero of this game, hitting a home run, a walk-off that looked like.
Woo!
There are fireworks that I am still shocked did not set the entire cornfield on fire. Don't know if they considered that, but I was down for the risk. And in general, I was here for Major League Baseball putting on what felt like their version of Shakespeare in the Park, almost. It was incredibly sincere, and it had baseball that was good, so I do think it was cool in that particular way.
The question, yeah, was it cool? This is probably the coolest thing that's happened to baseball in, like, recent memory. It also was perfect. Like, MLB could not have scripted a more perfect outcome, and what you got was, I think, really the ideal of what baseball should be, like capturing the tradition and the simplicity that can make the game beautiful, but also the future of the game with Tim Anderson and the joy and the excitement. Like, I was a little bit taken away and emotional watching the end.
People were crying.
All right, we done?
I didn't cry. I just said I was emotional.
Are you guys done?
People.
Are you guys done?
Men were crying.
Are you guys done? This was ridiculous. Like, okay, the game was cool.
Hater.
It was a walk-off home run. Awesome. But this was ridiculous. People talk about baseball. It is too old. You know how we can solve that problem? By tying ourselves to a movie that came out in 1989 that even us old people have not even seen. I've never seen Field of Dreams. Like, you've seen it? Don't lie, Mina. You've never seen it.
Yes! No, I have actually, it's been a while, but I have actually.
Hold on. I've seen parts of it over the course of a childhood, but I do think, like, you guys should try to explain for people who haven't seen it what Field of Dreams is about.
I read about it. It's about a hallucinogenic trip is what it's about. Like, some guy who owns a farm, I guess, decides after he hears voices that he's going to plow his whole, like, field, his livelihood. He's married. He's married.
Plowing them with dreams. Daughter.
And then he travels in time.
Fungal.
Back in time. And dad comes out and throws him a ball and people cry like, this is a great movie. Like, no, selling corn is how he feeds his daughter. He's like, nah, bleep that. Let's mow this down because a ghost told me to.
So my takeaway is you're not going to watch Field of Dreams.
I read it.
Yeah, we're a thumbs down on Field of Dreams.
And also, like, when you do these type of synergies with other entertainment properties, the best thing is that you link it to something else that's popular so you can both benefit. Last year, we saw the NBA hook up with Marvel. It was corny as hell, but you know what? The NBA could benefit from being hooked with Marvel, just like Marvel could benefit from being connected with the NBA. How are they benefited by connecting themselves to a movie that no one under the age of 50 care about? Mina, you don't care about this movie. Don't lie.
My main issue with this, because I support the ambition behind it, Dominique. I support
What's the goal?
The ambition is to make baseball an event. And this felt like an event. Like, not all events are good, but this event seemed to matter. My main critique was that they didn't embrace nature more because they built a weird fence in front of the cornfield, which is non-canonical per Field of Dreams, according to the Wikipedia page. And furthermore, prevented us from seeing Major League Baseball players jumping into corn. And that's what I would have wanted, even if that is quite literally the metaphor that Dominique is using to critique Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I mean, the fence was the best thing that they added because it obscured the view of the cornfield, which I don't know why, but cornfields make me nervous. Like, I'm not excited about cornfield. At no point have I seen a cornfield and been like, ooh, yeah, let's get hype. I want to play some ball.
I was with you in terms of, like, the historical problematic nature of the movie and MLB not being progressive, but I draw the line at insulting corn. As somebody from Nebraska, leave corn out of this.
I'll eat corn, but cornfields, like, in any movie, has anything ever good happened in a cornfield in a movie? And I'm including Field of Dreams. No, the answer is no. Nothing has happened good in a cornfield in the history of any movie ever.
Time to play the game that is still shocked. I, of all people, am the only one who's actually seen Field of Dreams. See? Oh, no.
Yeah. God. Right? It's that way. And then this way.
You've actually seen it. Like, you lie about movies.
Yeah, we don't believe that.
Tomorrow on NFL Network, Chargers and Rams.
So I'm going to be watching the Seahawks because I think anybody who's even a little bit interested in the Seahawks will be watching the Seahawks. So let's find out why we're talking about this.
Mina, I don't know about you. I missed the preseason. I am thrilled that we're all back together again for the preseason.
I'm so excited. I haven't even been to the stadium, but Andrew, I was told this was a 3-man booth. There's only two of us.
Incredible acting.
I didn't get that.
That's what I heard.
Andrew, Mina. When are we going to LA?
Yes!
So yeah, somehow the world's number one Seahawks fan continues to just call games for the Los Angeles Rams. I am supportive of Mina. I am disappointed though, and I will give a conditional yes on the basis of if she's not wearing that Radio Shack Rams polo shirt, I am out on this. But if she is, I am in. Dominique?
Absolutely. I am a fan of Mina and her new Ramley. But most importantly, like, I love Mina. She did a great job last year with Maurice Jones-Drew next to her. But I'm very excited about Aqib Talib. Like, he did a couple games last year. And generally, I think that putting DBs in the booth is a smart move, not just because I'm a DB. I have no desire personally of going into the booth, but because we are so used to the quarterback's perspective. So I find it exciting to know that Talib's going to be in there breaking down the way that defenders look at situations, things that they're thinking about, while Mina is doing all her X's and O's analysis.
So for the record, I got made fun of for defending Ryan Fitzpatrick. Dominique just defended defensive backs as if he has no bias. And now I'm going to ask Mina if she's intrigued in herself.
He's actually making an interesting point, unlike you. Of course I'm intrigued. I'm going to be there, but I do have one objection.
Got a stunt. Mina's doing a bit.
Nothing like a Radio Shack polo.
Oh, clearly, you know what?
Clearly, yeah.
There's a that's more Best Buy.
Yeah, it's so very Best Buy. That. The yellow. Yeah. When you scoot back a little bit, I feel like I want to ask you about the TVs.
Tonight at 9:38 p.m. Eastern, Astros and Angels.
Yes, I'm in on the Angels. Shohei Ohtani is doing stuff like this. This is Vlad Guerrero Jr. He's the guy that people say is the MVP if it's not Ohtani, all of which is offensive to me because if there is an MVP that's not Ohtani, I mean, that's farcical. That is farcical. No one can be MVP if that guy is doing everything that he does, hitting and pitching. Dominique, are you intrigued?
I am intrigued. I will watch all the Ohtani highlights after the game is played because can't you tell by this shirt? I'm going out tonight.
Oh,
date night.
Oh, is that a leopard? Is that a jaguar print? Ooh.
Why do you say jaguar that way?
Because British people say it. David Attenborough says it on Planet Earth.
Are you British? Are you British?
Are you intrigued?
No, that was awful.
Wow, that was a worse accent than I've ever done. That is saying a lot.
That is.
Intrigued by all things Ohtani, but unfortunately tonight at that time, we've got Cowboys Cardinals. You know, your girl's got to watch Ben DiNucci throw down. So it's preseason football for me, baby.
All right, Mina's still working through that decision she made, so that's it for us. It's Friday afternoon. Go enjoy it. Dominique Foxworth, he does things on ESPN pretty much everywhere all the time. Mina Kimes will be stocking wireless routers, I think, tomorrow night, so check that out.